our children standing here, arms outstretched into the sky, tears drying on their face. He has been here. Brothers lie in shallow graves, fathers lost without a trace, a nation blind to their disgrace since he's been here. And I see no bravery, no bravery in your eyes anymore, dear sadness. And I see no bravery, no bravery in your eyes anymore, dear sadness. Only sadness.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Welcome, welcome to the French Connection Sunday edition. Today's date is the 21st day of October 2007. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here for another installment of the French Connection. Lots to talk about today with my guest, Mohammed Rafig, a returning a guest, a friend of mine, somebody we bounce a lot of the world's events off of. Things have been happening, ladies and gentlemen. They really are. I was just watching on the YouTube here. Congress people are being, they're demanding answers about this Israeli lobby. They're demanding answers about why we're in a war for Israel. They're demanding, solutions to this problem of Iraq. And it is, the heat is getting turned up on the elected officials. And you know that that's going to have a result. It really is. So, it's an amazing thing to see, and I couldn't be happier to know that this is what's happening in our world. I think the cascading effect of the truth is actually going to undermine their entire system, because, ladies and gentlemen, they rely on the fact that people will first are afraid to talk about what they do, and then the rest of the world doesn't know what they're doing. So they're either in the dark about the facts of the Zionist conspiracy, or they're afraid to say anything about it. Well, both of those conditions have been reversed, and it is an amazing thing to watch. But I'm going to bring my guest up right now. Mohammed, are you with me?
Hi, Daryl, I'm here.
Mohammed, how's things?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. How are you?
Well, I'm not bad. You know, the interesting thing that I'd like to start out with here is this most recent outing of information about Mr. Sarkozy. I don't want to go into too much detail about it because, you know, my geographic location might get me into some hot water, but the fact is, this is starting some real problems for these Zionists, because this was outed probably by an intelligence officer, wasn't it?
There's no doubt at all that this stuff has come from intelligence, and there's reasons why the intelligence are supposed to bring this kind of information to light.
It's their job, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of their functions. Clearly, they're there to make sure that the version of democracy that's installed in their member state inside of Europe complies with what we would expect of that functioning democracy. And obviously, if you've got somebody who, I mean, let's play it back on the days of the Cold War, Daryl. If we had a British politician who was in the pay of the Russians and had been using his position to gain access to documents that the general public and information that the general public don't normally have, and then feed that back, we would consider that extremely serious. So therefore, the primary function of the intelligence services is to sadly spy on these chaps,
yeah,
and chapesses, to make sure that they're not engaged in that kind of activity, that they only represent the national interest.
Well, you know, but the one point I wanted to bring up is that the Zionist conspirators are extra-national. They're not international. They're extra-national in that they don't really have an allegiance to any country outside of Israel. However, they come from countries throughout the world. And we've all got our resident Zionists in each one of our Western countries. And so the simple fact of the matter is that they are really a cancerous political movement, much like communism would have been in a truly capitalist state. But we know today that that's a false paradigm because, well, we'll talk about that another time. But the fact is that these people's allegiance are to another another set of goals and another set of moral codes that have nothing to do with their host country.
Well, that, exactly, now. And then what that, well, that's the overt, the open political side of it. And then obviously you've got the covert side of it. So where Zionists are trying to further their own aims, they would love to get hold of information about domestic policies or domestic knowledge and domestic technologies of different countries throughout the world. And they employed a group famously known as the Mossad, whose job it is to spy on other governments to try and gain this kind of information and knowledge and intelligence information that, that they want to gather. And as a result of that, they have operatives. And as part of the new European community that we have, there is an overarching intelligence service that not many people know about now. It's very clandestine indeed. And its job is to make sure that the member states themselves are acting in accordance with the objectives set down in the European so-called constitution, and that their political processes are not in any way being maligned or hijacked. So then we have this claim. Now, if you remember at the time that Sarkozy himself was standing for election, do you remember the Clearstream scandal?
That's right. Yeah, I do.
He was one of the people whose name actually came up as somebody who had been siphoning money that was being paid for weapons deals and the supply of weapons to all sorts of strange third parties that were supposed to be in Europe, but the kit kept finding its way out to the Middle East and Africa and things like that. And the money kept going wayward. And his name actually came up as one name that was on a bank account that had been receiving some of those money.
Well, you know that, you know, the next chapter on that was that they hung that one on the late Prime Minister de Villepin, in fact, and said that Sarkozy was being set up by the Jacques Chirac group. Now, here's the interesting thing. When Chirac was winding down his administration, they made it seem that Sarkozy was a despised figure within the right, and that Chirac didn't like him, which is a farce, a lie. And I'll tell you why it's a lie. First of all, Chirac didn't have to put anyone in his government he didn't like, but he gave Sarkozy the economic minister's position first, and then when he was done with that after 6 months, he gave him the interior minister's job. In other words, the two sweetest jobs within the government were given by Chirac to Sarkozy, a man he supposedly didn't like. And so why did de Villepin fall on the sword? So that Sarkozy wouldn't be blackened by the Clearstream scandal, and he would be able to continue his ascent to power. And the fact is, if his name showed up on it, it's more likely than not that he was a principal in that stuff, and that de Villepin has taken the blame for him, so he can continue his march to power.
Well, often with these kinds of people now, what you find is that, you know, I mean, his name was, the interesting thing is that his name was actually the beneficiary name on one of the bank accounts
right.
that received some money. So when it comes to a cover-up, it's like, well, it's rather like you having a bank account somewhere or anybody else having a bank account somewhere that some money comes in. We would ask the question, how did you end up with this? They went through the usual obfuscation exercise and cover-up, like you say, one group to protect him and cause somebody else to fall. Now, the interesting thing is that various groups that are looking on from the side, the intelligence agencies, are saying, hold on a minute, we've got a member of the government who's receiving government money directly into a bank account in his own name, and he might have managed to save himself politically for the short term in getting somebody else to fall on the sword and making up loads of nonsensical stories to justify what went on. But that doesn't wash with the intelligence services. So very shortly after that, the intelligence services, who actually probably hadn't paid that much attention to Sarkozy at that stage, decided to really look into his background a lot deeper, and that's when he discovered that he was the fourth hired hand acting out of Brussels as an intelligence agent for Mossad.
And they gave the names of the others involved. So, I mean, well, here's the interesting thing. They, of course, in the French version of this that showed up in Le Figaro, it poo-pooed the idea that anybody, any deep throat type character would be able to give this kind of information and that it was nonsensical. But the fact that he gave the supporting players in the list as well, the other members of this infiltration team, gave it a whole lot more credibility in my view.
Well, this demonstrated that the person was an extremely well-informed individual. When that claim went out about the other three names, isn't it ironic, Narrow, and this is for people to see through so they can understand the level at which the intelligence service is working at, the other three people didn't deny it.
There was
no statement of denial on the part of the other three persons named. The only person who went into a state of denial was Sarkozy, and that's because he'd reached a point of deep penetration into the French government. He's now in charge, and he's a known agent of a foreign government, for crying out loud.
But
that man can gain access to anything and everything that he wants to know, practically, inside the French intelligence services.
And then, but see, it gets worse than that, Mohammed, because there was an announcement made soon after the election of Sarkozy here in France that America and France would begin a new sharing intelligence information between Washington and Paris. And you've also seen a step up in the role that France is playing with this latest round in Iran. So it seems like they're trying to parlay this new relationship into almost the tip of the spear role for France, because America, of course, is not doing well in either of the theaters they're in, and clearly their standing in the world has been so badly tarnished that the only way that they can continue with this line of thinking is to enlist a neutral third country that has some credibility left.
Well, the problem that they've got now in terms of trying to yes, they are trying to use this relationship into France from America, but of course what they've missed, the problem with this, is that France has got a duty to the, for want of a better phrase, sovereign security of the United States of Europe. They're a member state of the European community. They have access as a result of that to intelligence information, which is shared with inside of Europe, but isn't shared outside of Europe.
Yep.
So we've got domestic border issues. Maybe we've got situations with Russia taking to the skies with its bears and all sorts of stuff like this now. And that information needs permission from all heads of government to release, say to America or to China or to anybody else that they wanted to. You'd have to have full onboard signatory of all the intelligence agencies, yeah? As well as that, this intelligence agency also has its own set of intelligence that it doesn't disclose to national domestic intelligence agencies. They're now, strangely enough, finding exactly the situation that they were put together for when Maastricht was being ratified, and this intelligence service came into being with the signing of Maastricht, which is to make sure that no member state is actually divulging secrets of the super state, the European community, untoward. And here they're faced with a man who's become leader of one of the member states, who is an operative for a non-state intelligence agency, known fact. They're going to have to deal with him. And what Sarkozy is going to find himself on the receiving end is not just the other member states now being very cautious about what information they're prepared to disclose, which undermines the security of the entire community, because now we're too frightened to talk to France about this issue or that issue, because we think he's going to relay that straight back over there.
Well, but it gets even more dicey when you take a look at the fact that Britain still is largely split in two on the issue of Israel. Of course, the people who are showing themselves to be the most vocal and most aggressive is the Zionist group, but there's still a quieter but still influential group within Britain that are now seeing that one of their member countries in the union that they've joined might be compromising them. And of course, they know that their government largely is already compromised, but this seems to be like the final nail in the coffin for them. And I'm sure there's going to be some people up in arms about it.
Absolutely, Dal. Absolutely. And in fact, the word is not strong enough, that might compromise. I mean, this man's job is to compromise. If he has been an agent of a foreign intelligence agency, his function is to compromise. So it's not he might do it or he possibly, there's no doubt. I mean, that's his function. I don't think any rational person can stand back and say, well, this guy must be handing information over because that's his job. And he's got to this incredible position to be able to do it, and undermining the whole security of the European Union, undermining Maastricht, undermining all the objectives of coming together as a European community to prevent war in Europe, which is the function now for people in America who maybe don't understand why we did this. It was to try and create an overarching government of handshaking between the member states and to build rapport so strong within the countries of Europe that we'd never face war again after the Second World War. And that was the original ideologue dream. And here we've got direct compromise, the antithesis, the absolute opposite of what we're supposed to be trying to achieve with Europe.
Well, but not only do we have that, Mohammed, we have it in favor of a festering sickness in the Middle East called Israel. And I have to say, I've said it on the shows lately that, you know, the Israelis are aware that live in Israel, what kind of sickness their nation represents. And as the Americans are becoming aware what kind of sickness America represents, this is awful because you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, there's only 4 million or 4.5 million Jews living in Israel, or maybe 5 million. They're running the European Union and North America. Now, this is a country smaller than the city of San Diego, California, running the whole show. This is scary. And when you see the kinds of ends they're willing to go to take full power, you know that they're trying to foment this next stage in Iran. And I don't trust what goes on in Iran half the time. I mean, here's the thing about the Iranians. The Iranians haven't spoke out on 9/11. They haven't said that bin Laden is a big lie. Why haven't they? You know, the fact is, I don't know who works for who these days. I mean, Putin was there. He could come out and say America's a bunch of liars. They blew up their own building, but he doesn't. So you don't know who works for who in this world, Mohammed. And half the time, they get their goals met regardless of who knows.
Well, that's the thing by way of deception, as the Mossad logo or slogan is, that they achieve it through deception. They're not really interested in trying to play the game outwardly. It's always been played through these secret mechanisms.
Yeah, but Mohammed, where are the Western countries in that should be playing this game in opposition to their criminality, such as Iran, let's say? Why can't Iran come out and say, America, you know, we've got an intelligence service too that knows all the details about 9/11, and we're going to open up the book on it. If you do any of this stuff, we'll flood the airwaves, we'll flood the world with the facts.
I think a bartering process that goes on with these intelligence agencies based on what they know. The Russians play an interesting game. The Russians have done this for a long time. They find out everything and pretend to know nothing. So they actually deny what they know, and that's kind of like a policy which they have. One of the reasons that the Russians won't come out openly and tell everybody what they know is because they don't even want anybody to know what they know. They're a very interesting group of chess players. I think with other parts of the world, it's always bargaining chips. So if somebody has knowledge of a particular issue and is remaining quiet about it, usually they're using the knowledge of that to try and get leverage somewhere else. So, you know, if you don't give, we want this deal for these aircraft, and, you know, if that goes through, then we'll lose this second copy of the Zapruder video with the actual gunman running off into the bushes.
Right.
You know, they have these things, but part of the way that they play them is in a way that we as ordinary people wouldn't expect them to.
Mm.
That's a problem for us.
But see, can't, you know, I brought this up with Barry Turner today. Can't we, you know, look, there have got to be intelligence people out there. I know there are in Britain, but there have to be a worldwide that aren't Zionists. They may have been on the ledger as working for them at different times in their careers, but they have to see the flow of history going against liberty and freedom and goodness and a world that can feed its people and its children, and they see the evil rising all around them. And they must feel like it, a responsibility to say something about stopping it. I can't imagine that all of them are bought into this lie, or all of them are working directly for these criminals. They can't be.
No, they're not. But the problem that they've got is that they operate in a particular way. So even if they feel that things are going badly, even if they feel that things are going wrong, only very senior people can actually take action. And that action usually takes the form of a leak. And what we would like to see, I suppose, Darrell, what we would say to the intelligence services is, well, if you can't come out overtly because you fear for your own life or you fear for your family's life or whatever, fine, we understand that, because they're privy to this special information. But it doesn't mean to say that they can't organise leaks. That's what their day job is. That's their bread and butter job. To get rid of Sarkozy, they have had to start a campaign where they're going to start leaking information, and that leaking process isn't over. You know, they're so far down the road with that, and what they've done is they'll put one bit of information out to warm people up to it, then another, then they'll repeat something, then they'll get somebody else to make the statement. So they've got a particular process. It's not a fast action sport, you know, say like American football might be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite slow. It's more like watching cricket.
Yeah.
You know, it's all, you know, we're going to put in a bowl here and we're going to move these guys around over here and you go and stand there. I suppose a bit more softball. You know, it's a lot strategic.
Yeah.
In the way that they're going to have to throw curveballs out there and try and, you know, understand what this particular batsman's weakness is. But they are definitely leaking information. We need it, more of it, and we need it to come more quickly. We'd like them to find a way of speeding up their process somehow.
Mm.
The internet's there, and in the same way that they can get people to front up for the bad guys, you know, they should actually get somebody, rather like Joe Vials did, because Joe Vials, you know, the evidence is very strong that he was previously linked to Mossad, and had just become overcome with guilt at what he'd done in his life, and spent his retirement trying to repair that. And you know, and he did a very good job in bringing some of these things to light. And you're right, Darrell. There must be a lot more guys out there and women out there who are feeling quite guilty about what they know, what they're suppressing, and they just need to get creative with it. Find clever ways of getting it out.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, I've watched as an ex-partner of mine gets railroaded out of the country and of course probably into the hands of the bad guys, not to be doing qualitative work any longer. You know, where was the protection that should have been afforded somebody on the front lines like that? It wasn't there. Where's it going to be if I need protection? Probably the same, not going to be there. You know, you're on your own, kind of thing. And this is a real battle. I mean, a lot of people take this almost as a hobby. You know, they come home and they light their computer off and they read through the latest, nonsense that's going on in this crazy world. And it's almost as a hobby to them. This is anything but that. This is real stuff with real death, real, freedoms lost, real horrors for our future. And boy, I'll tell you something, being on the front lines like I've been, I would have expected, being this far into it, that I'd have had a little bit more protection than I get.
You raised a couple of issues there. One is the desensitization of people. There's been a lot written about that, because people should feel angry. They should feel mad. They should feel upset about various things. But we've been somehow conditioned through the mainstream media process throughout our lives that we can see things which are shocking, which are evil, which are torturous. So that when the photographs of Abu Ghraib come out, we look at them and we think, well, that's unpleasant, but, you know, I've seen worse. You know, people are very desensitized, and the level of reaction which is coming from them is all wrong. They should feel a lot more motivated based on what they're seeing. Having said that, it's not necessarily their fault. And I think people need to think themselves, you know, is my response appropriate? You know, I'm looking at this tragedy here. You know, we read every day on the net about another 50 babies being killed in Baghdad or somewhere else in Iraq, and families being torn apart here and there in Afghanistan or wherever it's going on. And is our reaction really appropriate enough? Well, there we go. That's another day of that. Like you say, Donald, they really need to be saying, no, I'm going to start writing some emails, and I'm going to put some effort into this. You know, I'm going to, even if it's just, right, I'm going to send emails out to the local paper. Why am I reading about this on the net and you don't cover it?
That's right.
Because, we need to complain at politicians, yes. But the mainstream media are turning out to be probably the second biggest villains in the whole piece.
Or possibly the worst, and I'll tell you why, because they are the vehicle that all these criminals ride upon. Now here's the next thing, too. I mean, the horror of this, Portugal being outed as a center for pedophilia, where the elites have been going down to Portugal and sexually abusing young children for decades and decades. And, of course, so the European Union just had their constitutional meeting together over in Lisbon. I mean, what were they doing there over the weekend? Having, slaps and giggles with eight-year-olds? I mean, and this is not news to people anymore after the Mark Dutroux case in Brussels and after the Boys Town Franklin cover-up in America. And see, we are even desensitized to our children being raped.
There is one of the Monty Python team has recently, had a three-year affair with a 14-year-old girl, which means that she must have been 11 or 12 at the time that started, you know, all from the stage door, Chris Langham, and he ended up with, for 15 offences, less than a year in jail. I don't think that you or I would have got less than a year in jail, would we?
11-year-old when he started?
Yeah.
He needs to be castrated and thrown into a prison without protection.
Mm.
Jewish
and strong connections, and everybody felt sorry for him or whatever. When we look at the perversion and the abuse of children which is going on in the world, I come back to Operation OR, O-R-R. Go and look this up on the internet.
Yeah.
Operation OR. The US police, I don't know which branch, FBI, whatever, they bust a paedophile internet site in America. Good work. Well done, guys. And they got the database of all the subscribers to that service, for want of a better phrase. And they found that more than 6,500 of them, Darryl, were Visa and debit cards, credit cards that had been made by people who live in the UK. They'd been subscribing to this service, 6,500 of them from the UK. So all the UK card holder information was sent over to the UK, and the police began Operation OR. With this database of known paedophiles, 6,500 of them, they then set about getting the card holder details, finding out who it was, performing midnight raids, whatever, arresting people. Of the first 200, that they arrested. Of the first 200, they included the deputy leader of, I think it was, Hull City Council. They were judges, barristers, lawyers, policemen. More than 70% of the people. They weren't the average Joe in the street. They were all people in entrusted positions, part of the establishment. And as a result of the first 200 getting 150 arrests of lawyers, judges, barristers, prosecutors, council members, and MPs being threatened, Operation Orr has now been pushed to one side. And those known paedophiles are not being prosecuted by the British police. They abandoned that 5 years ago.
And, well, they just made a big push here in France to get paedophiles arrested, 315 of them. And it looks like they're all a bunch of people that surf the Internet for fun and games. And of course they've been splashing all over the television screen this information about this guy over in Thailand, a very cretinous looking guy, cruising for kids over there. I'm wondering if this isn't to cover the, next, leaking of what's happening, because they knew that this Portuguese thing was going to explode on them about the elite. So what are they going to do? They're going to swamp your television with low level stuff so that you get bowled over by the amount of the nonsense.
Well, they again, it's smoke screens, isn't it, Darryl? It's what we expect, sadly, from the mainstream media. All the mainstream media has become is a smoke screen to these classes, rather than the media that we expect them to be, which is to investigate, to expose, and to push it. Lord Levy and his cronyism and taking cash for various levels of knighthoods and honours. I mean, it was written down on paper. They've got the details, and the police are walking away from it all because the people involved are, in quotes, too big. They're too big to prosecute. You can be too big to be worthy of answering for an offence. The fact of the matter is that when we have that dual state and dual class law, that's where at the time that revolutions come about, because
yep.
We can't allow that. We can't allow a pariah class to go out there and think that our children are fair game. I remember the law lord who ended up leaving the UK to Israel, Greville Janna. Now, I met the parents of a young boy from their, I think they were from Coventry or Leicester, my God forgive me, I can't remember clearly which town they're from, but I met them, and they had been campaigning for years to try and get the local police to arrest Greville Janna, who was at that time their local MP, for taking their son down to London and buggering the poor little chap. And they couldn't even get the local papers to touch it. They produced booklets and leaflets of their own. They leafleted everybody in their hometown, and the police ignored it. This means that the police might have done the job themselves.
Or they might be, the leadership of the police might be doing some buggering of their own.
Well, Greville Janna is a law lord, a member of the House of Lords for the law. You can't have somebody like that engaged in those activities. Therefore, he was too big to be arrested and tried, did the decent thing and left and went to Israel. And in the meantime, this family don't have any sight of any justice whatsoever. And he still has his respectability because he hasn't actually been arrested anywhere. But as so many of these perverts do, they take refuge in the state of Israel. And we have to ask, you know, what is the, you work for the intelligence services, does that include defending the rights of these people to do things to children? You know, the fact of the matter is these people are not protecting the children in the world by any stretch of the imagination. They're burying the information that would have them all arrested.
Well, Dunblane, let's go into that for a minute. That's a touchy subject because the leading power broker in the country is got links all over that murder from that cretin. And the fact is, in America with this Franklin guy, where these children were actually doing tours of the White House, 12-year-old boys and girls. At midnight.
Absolutely disgraceful.
Now, it is, and then, of course, what does this guy do up in Dunblane but murders all the children so they won't talk, and he's connected to his, up to his eyeballs to Brown, and then what happens? The local MP does a good cover-up for him and gets made the head of NATO.
Yeah.
This is age.
And again, I would imagine that if we looked on that database, we might find a visa card from Gordon Brown or Tony Blair on there. You know, we don't know. The police have that. That's 6,500 known child, molesters and perverts that could have been off the streets, and they've been left at large to roam up and down. 6,500 of them who've never been prosecuted. And in the meantime, we're chasing people with speed cameras and things like this for minor petty offences. The police have become a farce, certainly in this country. And from the way that things are coming out in Portugal, they've been a farce turning a blind eye for decades in Portugal. Where does it end? The point is, Daryl, that these people are useful. If that database found its way into Mossad hands, oh, what a lovely coup. We've got 6,500 well-placed people here in the UK who we know are child molesters, and we pressed the pause button on Operation Or, so that we can actually have a word with all of these different people, because now we've got real strong power over people, 6,500 of them at all levels. So if a court case goes before Judge X, Y, or whoever he is, we just send him a note saying, you know, you're on the database, and if this guy gets found guilty, we'll have to prosecute you too. Totally open, wide open to blackmail.
Yeah.
Wide open.
Well, and here's the other thing. I mean, you've got the intelligence services knowing exactly who to disseminate the information to here in France about Sarkozy, because at the time Sarkozy took over as interior minister, he was a part of the head in the government over the national police, but he was not in charge of the gendarmes. And the gendarmerie is the largest police force in France, and basically the people who received the information on him was the group he couldn't control. Now, what's the first law he passes when he gets into office as the president was to merge the national police with the gendarmes.
That's typical of the political playing that's going on when that mechanism, that two police mechanism was there as a security measure for the French people.
That's right.
But the whole purpose of that was it was a control and check in society that had been deliberately created. Imagine this. I mean, think about this, darling. All the people at home, think carefully about this. For decades, some of the dodgiest behaviour you could imagine by French premiers and French persons got involved in, but they lived with that. They were prepared to tolerate that, you know, this is there for the public good. It actually did them good. Why? Because they knew that if they went too far with a particular issue, they could be held to account. So one of the purposes, you see, one of the good beneficial things of the intelligence services doing this kind of work is that if an MP, if a member of parliament, if a congressman or a senator in the States knows he's going to get his collar felt, he'll think twice about things. So it's preventative as well. But when he knows, hey, we can do what we want, we're above it all now, we've got carte blanche, at that point, not only is the country corrupted, but that person is, because he's lost the ability to have that power over his shoulder, saying, hey, leave that child, don't give in to these inclinations, be strong within yourself. Even he, on a personal level, has lost that, and Sarkozy, by doing this, has lost something that would have acted as a check or control on somebody who wanted to represent the national French interest. But somebody who doesn't have the national French interest at heart, well, that would be a barrier to them.
Jesus. Oh, you know, well, I guess I always knew that it would have to get worse before it got better.